being a blessing to the assembly. We are the salt of the earth, and the salt is the preserver, and it's a keeper, and it's a blessing, and it adds flavor, and we are the salt of the earth. And as Christians, what is the most important institution on earth, or in heaven for that matter? What is it? The church. The church meant everything to Christ. Everything. He came down to earth. He preached. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, the church. And then he died for the church, shed his blood. It's the blood-bought institution and the only blood-bought institution on the face of the earth. And it's the only one that's going to go to heaven. And so the whole New Testament is built on giving instructions to the church, how people are to live. And the whole thing is around the church. And the word church means assembly. Well, that's not the only part of the church, but the fact that the meaning itself is assembly shows you that the assembly is very important. And you need to have the right. You're going to have the church. If you're going to be a proper blessing to the church, there's a number of things that you have to do. The church, assembling, was what I call a great commandment. We have the great commandment, and then that's love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then we have the other one, second like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, you know, being at the assembly and doing what you're supposed to do at the assembly is a great commandment because it has both these in it. At the assembly, why you worship God. That's where the love part of God comes in. At the assembly, you also encourage one another. That's loving your neighbor as yourself. So I call it a great commandment. In fact, when I was writing up my article on the military, that's the first thing I brought up. People that go into the military, and I think Brother Dave said, he says, give up that job so you can be in the assembly. People go into the military to get a job. And it's unfortunate that since the draft went away, when there was a draft on, we heard a lot of things about reasons not to go into the military. But then for many, many years that went away, and I think we just kind of didn't think about that too much. But when you go into the draft, or when you go into the join it, why you are personally, or really, you are directly putting yourself into a position where you have no control whether you make the assembly or not. And therefore, you have broken a great commandment. But so much for that. I have an article on that, and if any of you are interested in, I can make copies. But that's not my point to get into that today, but it does do that. What's the difference? Go take a job where you can't be at all the assemblies, or go to the military where you can't be in any of them maybe sometimes, or you have to be under what do they call those guys though there that teach the chaplain, yeah. And no, there's no excuse for a Christian going into the military, but that's another thing. But we have to prepare the right attitude in our hearts if we're going to be the salt of the assembly. And David said that in Psalms 122:1. This is the attitude that we have to have. Talking about the joyful attitude that we just heard preached on. Psalms 122:1. I can't find it here, I'll quote it. These little onion skin things are hard to find anything. 122:1. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Didn't quite find it there. Didn't want to take any more time. So, Was David happy? He had his mood prepared. It was time to go into the assembly, and he was glad. And that's the way you need to start out. You might wake up, and maybe because of things that are your own fault, a lot of times you just didn't get to bed in time. And so Sunday morning rolls around, and it's hard to get into the mood. Well, you're the one that did it to yourself, and so you'll just have to work on that mood. And you can do it, as long as you didn't miss too much sleep. And it's important. That's the way you have to begin. If you don't have the proper beginnings, you're not going to have the right endings of your church service. So, you need to show you're happy, even if you don't feel like it. And this is where that word agape comes in so many areas of our preaching and teaching. That word agape, the highest form of love, means you do what is right because it is right, not because you feel like it. Hopefully, as you put that into practice enough, you will also begin to feel like it. But that has really, that's not emphasized. When the Bible says love your enemy, maybe an older Christian can learn maybe through pity and so forth. Maybe that's a kind of a love to love. But those new Christians and younger Christians, probably they're going to have a hard time having any love as far as that feeling. But there's nothing, not the devil himself, can stop them or any one of us to do what's right towards our enemy or towards our fellow Christian or whatever it is, whether we feel like it or not. Feelings are in subjection to your will. And if you look it up in the lexicons, agape love is the love of the will. That is the emphasized thing. And there's a lot of things we need to do in Christianity that we don't like to do. Believe that? Do you believe that? Well, sure there is. Think we like to go through the trials that God allows us to go through? Oh, I just love those. I mean, wonderful to be a Christian because of all these trials. I mean, yippee, you know? No. You do it anyway because that's agape. You hope that some agape will become phileo too, but you don't worry about that part. Whether it becomes that or not, you just do what's right. And that's what I like about agape. I cannot tell my emotions, man, you feel good about this. Start feeling, hey, where is that feeling? Start feeling that way, something wrong with you. You can't do that. But I can go up to a brother that's offended me or whatever and shake his hand and say, glad to see you. The devil himself can't stop me. So, that's agape. And a lot of what I have to say depends on our ability to show agape. The ideal is to be cheerful right from the start with, like David was. So, we had a fellow my wife knew him for years, up there in Portland. He was named Bert Knight, and he was an old man, and he was not in real good health, but he was always asked, when he was asked, how are you doing, Bert? You know, he wasn't in good health, but do you know what his answer was? Well, this old body isn't doing good, but Bert Knight is. See? Well, he had his emphasis on the right things. And you know what agape means too? People don't like this, but it's actually, agape sometimes just takes pretending. Now, pretending is normally used in a bad sense because you're pretending to be something you're not, and that's bad, that's wrong. But when you're pretending when you're doing things what you don't feel like doing, that's still pretending in a way, but you're doing it for a good reason. And furthermore, the longer you do it, then you begin to enjoy it. And then the agape comes in. But I know Christians that feel it's just plain hypocritical, it's just plain pretense to act any different than they think. You ever met Christians like that? They actually think that. They think they're fake. No, they're not being fake. If they're doing it, because it's the right thing to do. So, it's only when you're wrong. It's like greed. Greed in itself just means strong desire. Normally we think of it in the bad. But Christ had greed. He said, my food is to do the will of the Father who sent me. When the disciples brought him food and he was real hungry from a long trip, he just said, my food, my desire, my strong desire is to do what my Father wants me to do. And so, greed, good greed. Pride. Did you know there's good pride? I mean, the Romans teaches us very clearly that a man ought not to think of himself more highly than he ought, but you are to think of yourself highly, just not more highly than you ought. So what am I getting at there? Self-confidence? I mean, people that don't feel highly about themselves at all, why they just drag around, they don't have much motivation to do anything, they don't care about their appearance, they don't care about anything, and they have no self-respect, and pride is the same emotion as that. Pride is only becomes the bad part of pride when you put others down with it and you think you're the greatest. You have more of it than you ought to. But otherwise, we all need pride. And so those things are important in our lives. And they're going to be necessary for our assembly too. We have to have self-confidence. The brother is speaking about joy. You know, joy and self-confidence are very related. If you don't have any self-confidence and you don't feel you can do much, well, you're not going to be very joyful. And so you need that. And so we better have some pride. We better work that into our lives, but not let it go too far. And if we have the proper kind of pride and the proper kind of agape, we will go through the assemblies and we will have good assemblies. Now, early Christians braved dangers, they braved persecution, they braved death. They knew when they started out to go to church, if the church was outlawed going there, why, they knew that their wife could be taken and be tortured right in front of them, or their kids, worst of all, and they'd have to see that. The Roman soldiers would make sure that their eyes were open as they saw their loved ones killed right in front of them. And you know what? They went to church anyway. They assembled anyway. That didn't stop them. Nothing stopped them. It was important to them. And it is important to us. We know the scripture that says, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. I've heard a lot of people ridicule that and they say, you just use that all the time. Forsake not the assembling yourselves. Forsake not the assembling yourselves. You're a legalist, you know. No. The Bible says that I believe it. And furthermore, how some people are getting around it, they're just, really, they don't love the Lord. And they just have less assemblies. That way you don't have to worry about forsaking. And that's going all over the place. Believe me, that is going all over the place. Some churches only have, a few of them just have church, Sunday morning, and a few more have Sunday school and church, and a few more have Sunday morning and, say, Wednesday evening, but there is, among people that used to belong to us, and maybe some who still belong to us, but that are headed that way. Well, if we want to be the salt of the earth and be a salt to the church, the one thing we don't want to do is take away the time we spend in the assemblies. Today, what do we do? I mean, we have 2.5 hours, say, Sunday morning, 1.5 Sunday night, 1.5 Wednesday night. That's 3, 2, 5.5, maybe 6 hours. Now, is that too much to give to the Lord to assemble together to accomplish your purposes of the assembly? Is that too much? A person works an 8-hour day. That's not even 1 8-hour day. But people feel the need to reduce it more and more because they don't love God. And my background in the Christian church was they didn't. Is it 10 o'clock? Is it 12? Well, pardon? 12:15? Okay. Well, I still better move. Okay. Well, I got to get into the meat here. So, about to skip some of this. So let's get into some of the basics. I've never preached a sermon like this before. When Brother Don gave it to me with just 1 week to go, I thought, what am I going to do, you know? A lot of times you can kind of dig up old sermons that have pieces here and dig up another that has a piece here to put in there. This one was completely new. I've never preached anything quite like this. And so I just did some brainstorming. Let's start with the beginnings. Be on time. When you're not on time, that just shows that you don't regard the church, the assembly, as very important. Whether you like to think of it that way or not, that's what you are showing. When you're not on time, you walk in late, the class is going on, what happens? Everybody turns around, see who's coming in, and they miss a few words of whatever the teacher was trying to teach. So you've distracted people. And Sunday school, maybe we ought to change the name because somehow or other people get the idea that that's not part of the assembly. And they truly do. I mean, you see a lot of people, Sunday school, they skip. Maybe we ought to call it Assembly A and Assembly B or something like that. I don't know where that would happen. But it's just as much as part of the assembly as the assembly. Sure, you don't have the Lord's Supper during it, but the teaching is just as important as the Lord's Supper. You can't really say one's more important than the other, if you know what I mean. It's very important for the teaching. It's very important for the Lord's Supper. You can't stop either one, but nobody can say, well, the Sunday school doesn't have the Lord's Supper, so I just want to be there for the Lord's Supper. That's the most important part. And really, a lot of them like that will say, I don't even really care for the preaching and teaching, just the Lord's Supper. If I've done that, well, I've done my duty. Well, no. So as you go in the door, you hold the door, especially young people. Hold the door for the elderly. The elderly love young people, especially, that pay them attention. Will open the door, will shake their hands, and say hi. You know why they love them so much? Because that's so rare. But you young people can learn that, which you're not here now, but maybe your folks can teach you that. And that's very important, to visit. Not just holding the door to let them in, but I mean to actually greet them when they come in, say, how are you, brother, you know? And a young person doing that, that's very impressive. And now, when you come in, you can be grumpy or you can have a smile. And again, this is where agape may come in. You may be a little sick. Now, if you're badly sick, of course, probably wouldn't be there anyway, or you might sit in the back because you don't want to pass it on. But if you're a little sick, you got a little headache, whatever, you have something that's a little bothering you, you don't feel like being cheerful, but you do it anyway. Again, the devil himself can't stop you from doing that. Pretending, whatever you want to call it. Hypocrisy, whatever you want to call it. There's good hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is only bad because you are doing it to make yourself look good. Much more good than you are. If you're doing it to make other people feel good. I mean, maybe we can think of a better word than hypocrisy, but you can see every mood, every motivation, every emotion, I should put it, that God gave us has a good purpose. Sometimes we rename it if it has its good purpose, but it has one. So, now, if you come in grumbly, I was going to say this. If you come in grumpy and without a smile, did you know this? I suppose most of you know this. Have you ever just practiced this, just smile? It makes you, it drives a feeling in your brain, a good feeling. And if you ever tried this, do it. You don't have that good feeling in your brain. Just the actions. God made our muscles so that they affect the brain. And so just do it. Of course, if you're grumbly, that's more of a serious nature, and God hates that. God destroyed people there in 1 Corinthians 11 because they grumbled, the Israelites. And that's even more serious than just grumpy, but you got to take care of your attitudes there if you have a problem with that, because you can become, well, why do you grumble? You're discontent with God's system that he has in mind for you, just like the Israelites. And we need to get our minds corrected on that, because we are calling God a liar when we are grumbly and just complaining about him and the things we have to do. And most people won't grumble right at the things that God did. They'll grumble at the preacher. They'll grumble at another person. See, it's hard to grumble against God. It's easy to blame it on some person that maybe caused you to get grumbly before you came in, or some person that once you come in they make you grumbly, whatever. It's easy to blame on people, but really it's God you're grumbling at, and that's a serious nature. Now, there's a reason for the assembly. Hebrews 10:24, to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. Now, the Hebrew Christians had a problem. In 5:11, Paul, I believe he's probably the Hebrew writer, he said, you guys have become dull of hearing. I can't get anything through to you because you become dull of hearing. Well, they didn't have the right attitude. Did they have to be dull of hearing? When he got done describing to them all the benefits of the New Testament over the Old Testament, did they have to be dull of hearing? Those that went on being that way chose to be that way, just like the Israelites chose to decide that if they went back to Egypt, it'd be better there, even though they hated it so much when they were there. It's a choice. It's a personal choice. And so being discontent with the things of God when he's such a great God and so giving us so many blessings is your choice. And the assemblies, if you are not glad to go to them, or if you can't make yourself glad through agape, then you got a problem. People do this. They show boredom. They come in and they sit down and they look out the window, and they maybe look down at their Bible with kind of a purposeless look, or they play with the baby, or you can see the look on their face, you know, that they're not interested at all, and they're dull of hearing. They're just bored, and they're lazy, and they have no interest, and those people are doing a sin against God in the assembly. They don't have any interest. They show disrespect for the whole purpose of meeting, and that's to encourage somebody else, others, hear the preaching, and neither one of those are important to them with that attitude. And we have seen a lot of bored people come to the assemblies. To show lack of attention to what's being preached and taught and to the people that are there, that you might encourage them, is just another piece of boredom. Some people don't even look up at all or hardly once they sit down. Look down, you know? Yeah. They look at their hands, or they examine their fingernails, or something like that. Yeah. I've heard the lesson giver when you're teaching the lesson and you look out there and you see some people that never raise their head, never show any interest, never participate. If there's some classes, participation is allowed, you know. Most of them probably allow a little bit, but they just do this, you know. That discourages you as a preacher or as a class teacher. I mean, you're trying to get a point through to people. You want to hear them. You want them to hear them. You want them to be better people. You want to help them, and you know you're doing no good because they just don't care. And then you have the kind of people that don't care for people. I mean, there's somebody they're mad at, somebody they dislike. And they come to church and they see those people that they don't like very much, and they won't shake their hand, and they won't say, "How are you today?" Sometimes they might think they have reasons. Sometimes maybe somebody in the church did them a wrong, and maybe they have a legitimate reason for knowing that person did them wrong. Mostly it's guesswork and it's a misinterpretation, but some people may be to say, "No, that person did that to me, and I know that was intended, and so I'm sure I'm right about him doing me wrong, and so I'm not going to shake his hand. I'm going to frown at him, and that's not right. That's not agape. Again, you do what's right because it's what you are supposed to do. It's right. There's no reason why you can't go up and shake that person's hand and say, "How are you today?" And have a little bit of a smile. You probably have a big smile. That might be kind of hard, but you can have a reasonable smile. Instead of treating them like dirt, even though they might deserve it. And if they deserve it, that would be up for you and them to work out. You go to them and try to work it out, but you don't show that grumbliness or that dislike for them before the whole congregation. You know what happens then? People join them, you know. The friends of them, they become on their side, and then the friends that, like you, will become on your side, and then you have a great big church problem. I mean, something that could have just been between you and them. And furthermore, if you have something against them, and it's legitimate, and they need to repent of it, but they don't repent of it, you don't go on and be mad at them. It's not your business to be mad at them. Now, once it's bad enough to be disfellowshipped over, you know, yes. But a lot of things that people do to you are not of that nature. They're not that bad. So you just need to learn to eat some things. Just eat it. They treated you wrong? Okay, well, you went through a test. God allowed you to go through that test. He wanted you to have that test, and you've prevailed, and you've done what was right. And you know what makes you feel good? It makes you feel good when people have treated you wrong, and you go on treating them right. Sometimes it'll heap the coals of fire upon their heads, and you hope it will, but sometimes it won't. But you just keep right on going. And I've heard brethren say, who have had a lot more experience than I, that they have done this to certain people. And in many cases, those people that they kept on treating right, even though treated wrong by the others, even though they treated them wrong, they came to friendliness after a while. So, but in the assembly especially, you don't want feelings. When you don't shake somebody's hand, why, people see that, and that makes them disturbed. I've even seen that recently. People get disturbed because they come to church to see peace and love and harmony and unity, and they see people not having that towards one another, and that discourages them. Some of them may even leave the church over. I came here to this church to see love and harmony and unity, and yet I see these certain ones that they just don't have it. Something's wrong with this church. And so you don't see them in the assembly. So we should not do anything to anybody in the assembly that puts them down, or where we act negatively towards them. I mean, the whole word negative I like because it covers a whole bunch of areas. You shouldn't do that. If anything has to be done, it should be done person to person afterwards. Or if you need to bring in another person or two to try to get it solved, but not in the assembly where all the innocent Christians that don't even know what's going on have to be grieved over that. But that's up to you. We all need to do what's right. I can't be responsible for what you. I can be responsible for whether or not I shake your hand and I say, hi, and I am glad to see you. I'm glad, even as my enemy, that he came to church. He might learn something, you know. I'm glad. But what he does to me, I can't help. But nor is that my responsibility. See? If everybody would work on the things that they themselves can work on without waiting for the other person to do what they think, what you think they ought to do towards you, which you have no control over, there wouldn't be near the problems. And then I got to go through just here by naming a few things. Cliquishness. See that in church? What's the problem there? People are respecter of persons. If it's their family or their friends or whatever, they're all real friendly towards them and they ignore many times the others. That is not right. You should show your love to everybody. You should have time for everybody. But that goes on. Kids, they're bad at that, but adults can be bad at that too. All the Christians are important to God. And God is not a respecter of persons, nor should you be. There are certain people we take to, maybe more than the others, because there may be more of our nature or whatever, but that does not mean that we can just ignore the others and just have our friends over and so on. No, that's no good. And I'm about to run down here. People get in and out and up and down. See that in services? In and out and up and down. I mean, they go to the bathroom 5 or 6 times, it seems like, and that's just disturbing. It shows disrespect again for the teacher because he prepared a lesson that he wants people to hear, and they're gone so much. So unless that really needs to be done, it shouldn't be. And look alert, look alive, and listen when they're giving the lesson. So many Christians do have their heads down. Here's the teacher or the preacher, and they're not looking up. I like to preach to people when they're looking at me. You know? I mean, that just makes a whole lot of difference. It adds enthusiasm to you. They must, at least they're listening. But people that do this all the time, really, you'd have to question their love of God and His Word. Yeah. So, that's about, we'll have to stop here. Participation in class, and oh, 2 more things that I can just say quick. Dress up reasonably nice. In the Old Testament, God had the priest's garments for glory and for beauty. Okay, we don't have to have a shirt and tie. I mean, a shirt, yeah. No tie, though. Suit and tie. We don't have to have that. And we're not demanding that, but just reasonably clean, neat. Don't look like you just came out of the garden or you just came out of farm work you did or whatever, changing oil. Don't. There's no need for that. Show respect for God and His people. Shorts, of course, in modesty. Comes in there. So dressing up, that is a going down the drain thing. And you young people, don't text. You know, there's actually young people that think it's okay to text. I talked to one. They actually think that's proper. They're texting while the preacher's giving their lesson or whatever, and I told one of them, I said, how would you feel like it if you're up there preaching, you have a lesson, and guy has a newspaper in front of him, and he's reading the newspaper. You know, it got the point across. But those young people especially, they text. Rallies, they text. Oh, they think it's just a rally. We can do a lot of texting. Well, they're still preaching, but that's That's out of my part there because that's not the assembly, but glad to bring to you whatever I could here. So let's all stand.